5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Just when you think this year couldn't get any worse, on top of the mental and economic anguish caused by COVID, this damn virus has almost destroyed our bilateral relations and Australia's ability to maintain our international relationships. Yesterday, we saw China send a repugnant missive across our most sacred bow, slandering our troops on social media. It was widely condemned, but what gets me is that platforms like Twitter have moved to censor President Donald Trump, who absolutely tweets some nonsense. But why on earth is this fabricated image, which is quite frankly incredibly distressing, of an Aussie soldier holding a knife to an Afghan child's throat, still online? It begs the question about where these companies lie in terms of their moral and ethical standards. But again, that's a story for another day. Because our standing in the international business community right now, by the looks of it, is in the toilet. China has whacked tariffs on the majority of our exports, and bureaucrats over there haven't accepted a phone call from our trade minister for 7 months. Now, following international condemnation of the strip searching of women on board a plane from Doha bound for Sydney earlier this year, Qatar is now taking the first steps to shut down our $300 million sheep trade, which has caught farmers and meat processors around the country, especially in WA, completely off guard. And considering they're still reeling from the treatment of China, it's going to be a lot of uncertain days. Especially with uncertain days, there's a lot of hand-wringing going on and a lot of fraught nerves about these situations. Everyone who is directly impacted, specifically the Council for Minerals and Energy and the local Chamber of Commerce, are not saying a word. But here's hoping that the federal government put repairing these fractious relationships on the top of their agenda as soon as possible. Because no phone call for 7 months is not a case of your boyfriend is breaking up with you. It's a sign he's well and truly moved on and forgotten all about you. But despite all this, we've got some great news for you this morning, so let's get into it.
The West Live. The West Live with Jenna Clark. Brought to you by Neds. Take it to the Neds level. Gamble responsibly. 1-800-858-858.
Effective from 12:01 a.m. Tuesday, December 8, Victoria and New South Wales will be categorised as very low risk. Therefore, travel will be permitted to WA from these states. We will not hesitate to reinstate the hard border if there are outbreaks over east and we get medical advice to do so. Western Australia does remain susceptible to an outbreak, given nearly all physical distancing and gathering restrictions have been removed.
Well, that's just a few snippets from Premier Mark McGowan's press conference just a short time ago, announcing the opening of our borders for Christmas. After quarantine requirements since March, families will finally be reunited. But has it come too late for some who've maybe already made other plans and arrangements? And most importantly, are we prepared? December 8th is the day, and I'm keen to hear what our frontline health professionals think. Joining me now is the head of WA's doctors, is the AMA president, Dr. Andrew Miller. Good morning, doctor.
Morning, Jenna. Great to be here.
Great to have you. Right, the date is set. Are your troops behind this opening between Victoria and New South Wales come 12:01 next Tuesday morning?
Well, we are. I think that this is a good decision by the government. It's made on public health grounds, and it refocuses our attention on the fact that the biggest risk is actually in our own hotels already in the CBD. It's not coming in on a domestic flight at the moment. And so in a public health sense, it's great that people will be able to get together with their loved ones. That's really important. And it's good for, obviously, people's mental health if their business is doing better. But we've got to change the way we're living. We're living in a bit of a fantasy land if we look at what's happening with the rest of the world. And even the way that people are behaving in particularly Melbourne, but also Sydney and Canberra, they're just being a lot more careful than we are. Mm-hmm. And we don't want this thing to bite us in a way that means we have to go back to lockdown.
Yeah, absolutely. More than 230 days of zero community transmission of COVID in WA. When do you think we may see a bit of a spike in that, considering the soft border will come into effect in the next week or so?
Well, what's really interesting is that Victoria are going to reopen their hotels to international arrivals with a very different set of security and hygiene arrangements to what they had before, because they don't want to live through another lockdown. Mm. Now, our hotels are not as safe as we'd like them to be, the mm-hmm. people on the front line. Mm-hmm. And so we think that partly this has been because the federal guidelines around all the PPE and so on have been a bit dumb. They mm-hmm. haven't been rigorous enough. And so to prevent particularly spread through the air. Mm. So we want to have a look at what the Victorians bring in with their new hotel regime and encourage the government here and say, look, this is our biggest risk. We're incredibly vulnerable, as the government keeps saying, because everyone here is pretending like COVID never happened, yeah. Except that they're not going to CUDA yet. But let's get on with making it as safe as we can. So things like the hotels, sewage testing, QR codes, a little bit late, but look, you've got your homework in by the deadline, so mm-hmm. that's okay. Mm-hmm. We've all got to get used to wearing QR codes. And where are the masks that we're going to need if we do have an outbreak? Has anyone in the community thought about yet where I'm going to get a mask from? Because they had to wear them in Melbourne
yeah.
and in country Victoria and in New South Wales and in South Australia. We're going to need them too if we start to get a few cases.
Yeah, absolutely. Rather than toilet paper, maybe focus about, yeah, things like masks when we go to the shops this week. In terms of a slight spike in cases when, I'm going to call them foreigners, are welcome back into the Great Republic of West Australia next week. How are the hospitals and, you know, even GPs, are they prepared for what could come?
Well, look, general practitioners, by and large, have taken matters into their own hands. They've given up waiting for the government to ride in on a white horse and help them out. Mm-hmm. So they've gone and got their own gear for the most part. Mm-hmm. The government do have warehouses full of stuff, but we've got no guarantee that it's going to be given to anyone, and it certainly wasn't the first time around. Mm-hmm. So GPs are looking after themselves. And we have permanent telehealth items now, and people know how popular that was when it came in. So telehealth will be a great addition to our flexibility in all of this.
Mm.
The hospitals are not ready. They're going through the standard state health bureaucracy thing of, well, the committee's decided we'll get some fit-tested masks sometime next year. So our only game here is really lockdown and border control. We can't cope with big numbers of these cases in our hospitals. We don't have the processes and the protections in place there.
Yeah.
But hopefully, far better than needing to use your ICU, hopefully we'll be able to keep the disease out of the community and continue with that successfully.
Yeah, indeed. Now, the Premier outlined what visitors coming from safe states or low-risk states and territories will be experiencing when they enter either by plane or by road next week. They'll be screened, they'll be temperature tested, they'll be COVID tested if required, and they must have their completed G2G declaration paperwork on arrival, which, in case anyone wants to lie, is actually a legal document, so don't try and fib your way out of that. Do you think that that's enough?
Yeah, look, I think it's pretty good. I think it's world-leading as far as a border, a smart control border. We've been calling, as you know, for some months for a smart border, and mm-hmm. this is what it looks like.
Mm-hmm.
It's a thinking border. So it thinks about whether this particular person presents a risk and then follows them up. I had a meeting last week with the guys that run the contact tracing in WA and mm-hmm. who've set that up. And I think even though that system hasn't been tested, we can have some pretty good confidence that those people know what they're doing
mm-hmm.
And that they're in a better state certainly than Victoria was at the start of their second wave.
Mm.
So these sort of arrangements, I have no criticism of them, and I think that the government are backed the right horses in that respect. And I think that, there'll be some gaps in the system here and there. People do tell lies. People do have fake IDs. Mm. There are guys who are trying to move a bunch of meth in and out of this state on any given day.
True.
And so there'll be cracks in the system, but I think that this is a reasonable way to proceed, given that we've got to be sustainable. We're going to have to go for another 12 months like this at least until we have enough people vaccinated to start really relaxing about this horrible disease.
Yeah, indeed. A lot of people that have maybe just arrived from safe zones like New South Wales and Victoria, they may have just started quarantine and they've been told that they have to stay in their 14-day isolation past the 8th of December. What do you think that the benefit of that would be, considering I think Victoria moves into 32 days of COVID, zero community transmission of COVID today?
Well, we don't know. The trouble with this disease is the incubation period, and we really want to hang on to those ones to see if they have symptoms mm-hmm. towards the end. Mm-hmm. There will always be someone who sits right on the borderline, right? If you arrive at midnight on the night of the Tuesday the 7th, then you're going to have to wait another minute before you can come in. So there's always injustices around big public health measures like this. But you've got to think about it like, well, I'm sitting at a red light and there's no traffic coming.
Mm-hmm.
It seems unfair, but, you know, if everyone just starts rolling through the red lights, then before too long, then you end up with an accident.
Mm-hmm.
So in these circumstances, you have sympathy. We've got to make sure no one's being treated harshly. I think that there are people, I'm seeing a lot of stuff on social media and about the harsh conditions of people who are in quarantine, and that's not on. We've got to give them good conditions in quarantine. They should have access to fresh air.
Mm-hmm.
They should have access to clean facilities and mental support and all those kind of things. But some people are going to have a difficult time of it. There's no doubt about that. There'll be some unfairness.
Yeah, indeed. In terms of South Australia, the Premier has said that people that have been fraternising with those in that medium risk zone will not be welcome, and they will have to. They may either be denied or have to isolate. Do you think that's a good move?
Yes, I think that the Victorian one's really interesting if you have a close look at what's happened with this pizza shop there. And we learned a few things out of that. One is don't blame people for having COVID and don't shame them in the media, because what the effect that that has is everybody else doesn't want to come forward anymore because they think that that same thing might happen to them. Now, that person may well have done the wrong thing and told some untruths, which has led to further problems, but they weren't the only part of the problem, because let's face it, the guy who was working in the hotel who caught it there was also allowed to work in a pizza store at the same time. There's nothing preventing that. That's the government's fault, not the pizza worker's fault. And we also learned that one person caught it just from going and picking up a pizza at the pizza shop. So we have to have respect for this disease. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's absolutely right to allow the time to run down and just make sure we go through a few 5-day periods, which is the generation cycle of this virus. And stick with this strategy of just keeping really low numbers so that we can continue to enjoy the incredible life that we have, knowing that Christmas is a real risk for us because Christmas is about gathering together and being close to people.
Yeah.
And there's nothing this virus wants more for Christmas than for us to all be real close to each other.
Yeah, indeed. And I guess effective today, that kind of leads me into the fact that effective today, that places of worship will be exempt from the 2-metre rule, and they can now hit a 60% capacity. Does that make you nervous?
Yeah, very much so. The thing about places of worship is people like singing.
Yeah.
People will even tolerate me singing, Jenna, if I go to a church.
And me.
I'm not ordered out like I am at most venues. If I start that in a bar, then I'll be out on the street within minutes, which is much safer for the community, because it's turned out all around the world. We've seen instances of places of worship, unfortunately, being close gatherings and people singing or speaking loudly, and that's a time when this thing can get up and running in the airspace. And spread by aerosol spread, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So we've got to be real careful, and I know that those places will take that responsibility seriously. But I would be thinking that, you know, people need to have their respectful religious observance, and I can understand that.
Mm-hmm.
But I reckon God would be patient with the idea of not too much singing this Christmas. I haven't got that officially yet, but once I get that tablet, I'll come down off the mountain.
Thanks
and
so much. When he tweets that to you, when he slides into your DMs, let me know. In terms of I feel like the one narrative that hasn't received a lot of airtime throughout this whole COVID period in WA is that there is a large portion of the community, whether they be elderly or immunocompromised, many of them haven't left their house in 8 months purely out of the fear rhetoric that was sort of floating around for a while. What's your message to them, given today's news that things will be opening back up slowly but surely?
Well, look, we love you and we're prepared to undertake the kind of things that we need to do as a community to keep our vulnerable safe. And I think we've demonstrated that. We've been very patient. by and large, mm-hmm. although there's been chatter about it. But some people have lost their businesses and other people haven't seen family for many months on end. And the reason we've done that is because we want to protect the elderly and the vulnerable. Mm. And I think one of the things we can do to demonstrate that to them is have this community conversation about where we're going to get our masks from.
Yeah.
We see a couple of cases starting to spread like we saw in South Australia.
Yep.
What type of mask are we going to access as members of the community and how and where are we going to wear them? Mm-hmm. So I think that would demonstrate to them that we're really taking it seriously, because I think more than the fear of the virus, which is a very real fear that, mm-hmm. that vulnerable people have quite justifiably, I think what's been more offensive is this sort of chat is that maybe some people don't matter too much, and maybe does it really matter if the virus spreads through groups that are vulnerable to it. And I think our community has quite rightly completely rejected that argument and said, no, we leave no one behind. That's not the Australian way. We will look after everyone. Mm. If you've got cancer, we'll treat it. If you're an elderly person, we'll do our best to keep COVID out of the community to look after you.
Yeah, indeed. You and I have spoken for a number of months about the importance of wearing a mask. And I was speaking to someone that went and did their Christmas shopping at a very packed out shopping centre yesterday on a Monday of all days. But that's a story for a different day. Would you encourage us and even more so now, to, if we are feeling under the weather or just want to be a little bit precautious, to wear a cloth mask when we go out in crowds?
Absolutely. Well, now that the border's opening, here's the news, right? Mm-hmm. If you're feeling under the weather, you don't go out. Mm-hmm. If you have to go out, you do wear a mask. And if you've got respiratory symptoms, you go get a test.
Yes.
We're back in COVID land now. We're not living in just WA fairyland anymore.
Yeah.
So those are the requirements. And certainly there should be no problem with anyone who wants to wear a mask wearing it, that mm-hmm. they're being good to other people, they're being good to themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And the evidence is that it reduces spread by 30% if people in the community wear masks.
Mm-hmm.
And it also gives you a less severe form of the disease if you do happen to catch COVID.
Right.
So even though the risk's not high, I think it would be a good thing for our community to start to get into the habit and just see it as a natural thing. If you see someone on public transport wearing a mask mm-hmm. or going to a shopping centre wearing a mask, mm-hmm. that's something that should just be an everyday occurrence now.
Yeah, indeed. And especially if you are getting on a plane, whether it's internally or over east, I assume that's the same message too?
Yes, I won't be getting on a plane if I can avoid it till I've had a jab in the arm with one of these promising vaccines that's coming up. But if you have to go somewhere on a plane, that's understandable. But certainly, wear a mask, and it's good for others, good for yourself.
Indeed. Speaking of the vaccine, we're seeing that they're going to be fast-tracked for approval in America in a number of days. What do you make of the vaccine news overnight?
Oh, look, this is fantastic news that there's a number of competing things. I think they'll be looked at very closely.
Mm-hmm.
Scientists are raising their eyebrows, and people like me are raising our eyebrows around the fact we haven't seen enough yet
mm-hmm.
published in the scientific literature, seen lots of press releases and so on. We'd like to see more criticism of these things in the scientific literature so we can be absolutely sure it's safe, because mm-hmm. the one thing we don't want is the population being put off the idea of vaccines. So
mm-hmm.
we're not going to do it like the Russians did and just give it to everyone and see what happens.
Oh.
But what we do need is studies of populations like that to see how they're going.
Yeah.
But these are very brilliant scientists with huge amounts of money, and it's happened incredibly quickly, partly because the disease is so widespread, so you can see whether it works quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think we can all take some encouragement from this, but we'll be looking at the middle of next year, towards the end of next year, before the general population get it.
Yeah.
And that's why it's really important we have sustainable, smart borders. And I think today's news is a step in the right direction.
Absolutely. Australian Medical Association West Australian President Dr. Andrew Miller, it's always such a pleasure talking to you and breaking down all of this hullabaloo for us. Thank you so very much for your time.
Great to be with you, Jenna, and don't forget the Bluey Christmas episode's out now.
And congratulations. How good was their ACRA win overnight? ACTA Award win overnight. I'll get that right eventually.
Oh, well, it was a foregone conclusion, Jenna. I'll be surprised if there's not an Academy Award in it for them.
Indeed. Speaking of Bluey, do you think that moving forward the creators should potentially do a COVID episode for the Littlies?
Absolutely, yes. They're calling it the ABC, the Australian Bluey Corporation now, so they could call it the Australian Bluey COVID Communication Network.
Indeed. Well, I look forward to dissecting the Christmas episode when it drops. AMA WA President Dr. Andrew Miller, always such a pleasure to chat to you. You take care.
Thanks. Stay safe out there. Thank you.
Now, yesterday we spoke to the Port Hedland Mayor, Peter Carter, about investment in the town reaching almost boom time levels. But something else that's reached a high is the effects of alcohol-related harm in the Pilbara region. As of today, a new banned drinkers register trial will be launched. To explain what this means and the impacts is Peter Peck. He's from the Liquor Stores Association of WA. Peter, thanks so much for your time.
Oh, look, I'd like to say long-time listener, first-time caller, Jenna.
Pete, it's so nice to have you with us. This is an Australian first that's being rolled out. Is that correct?
Well, there's been a similar thing rolled out in the Northern Territory, but mm-hmm. ours is a little bit more unique because this technology has actually been specifically designed for this task. So right. I'd say yes.
So walk us through how it works, and are your charges and stakeholders on board with it?
Okay, so the way it works is that from December 1, which is today, mm-hmm. until the 4th of January, when you go into a liquor store in the Pilbara, you'll be asked for photo ID. Mm-hmm. If you don't have it, they'll say, well, you're going to need it by the 4th of January, so organise it. You've got 4 weeks. Mm-hmm. Come 4th of January, when you walk into a liquor store, you have to have ID. It will then be scanned by a machine on the counter, which is about the size of a Kleenex box. Mm-hmm. That scan will read the data on the card as in the letters. It doesn't look at the photo. Mm-hmm. It then goes up to a secure cloud run by the Department of Local Government, and it will look for your name on a list. If your name appears on that list, then it will come back with a red indicator. Mm-hmm. If your name doesn't appear on that list, it comes back with a green indicator, which means you can go ahead with your purchase.
Right. So in terms of what I really like about this also is that there is an opt-in version of this as well. It's not just people. How do people end up being placed on this? How does that happen?
Okay, so there's a couple of ways. One is that let's say you come in contact with the police.
Yes.
And you've committed an act which has impeded on somebody else's liberty mm-hmm. while you're intoxicated, then the police have got an opportunity to apply to put you on the banned drinkers register through a barring notice or a couple of other means. Mm-hmm. But also, if you know that you have an issue with alcohol and you want to stop, mm-hmm. you can actually voluntarily ban yourself. Also, if you become luckily enough to be pregnant, you can ban yourself then as well for that 9-month period.
Right.
So it ticks FASD, it ticks a number of boxes. So yeah, it's just as important, the voluntarily banning people as well as the police bans.
How would the police ban work? Will they have to apply to a magistrate, or will it be an automatic thing if the crime is bad enough?
Okay, so what happens is they apply to the Director of Liquor Licensing.
Mm-hmm.
We've been assured by the department it'll be fast-tracked, mm-hmm. and so I would imagine it'll be a matter of days, not months, and they'll appear on that banned register.
Mm-hmm. In terms of, it's really interesting because, Pete, we have Crime Stoppers segment quite regularly on the show, and a lot of the crimes that do occur, they can be quite violent and sometimes to the detriment of things like theft and things like that. Are you worried about the safety concerns that may be caused by someone, say, being denied by appearing on the list, on the banned list, for people that are just trying to do their job?
Okay, so most people that work in the liquor industry have to deal with people that they refuse service mm-hmm. Day in and day out for a number of reasons. Mm-hmm. They might be intoxicated. They might believe that they're going to cause trouble. So they'll just say, please leave the store.
Yeah.
So they're pretty used to that. But what we've also got is a pamphlet. And if somebody starts to argue or complain, the pamphlet basically outlines it's nothing to do with the store. It's the government that mm-hmm. says you're on this ban list. If you want to argue this or appeal it, mm-hmm. then you either need to go to the local police station or put it in writing to the department.
Right.
So our guys will just say, mate, you need to go to the police station. I can't do anything. You need to go there and sort it out with them, and then I'm happy to serve you.
Right. Not a worry. What happens if you just say, I am a green tick on the banned drinkers register list and I am caught buying alcohol for someone that's red and on that list?
Okay, so at the moment, it's a trial, it's a voluntary trial, and there's going to be some loopholes like that, but and those type of loopholes need to be dealt with legislatively.
Yeah.
So if that becomes a problem, then they will become part of the secondary supply legislation, mm-hmm. and so they'll commit an offence if they do that knowingly supply to a person or a young register, and I would imagine they will end up on the register.
Mm-hmm.
There is also another option. and that is an amber light. So the amber light is where the actual liquor store itself places them on a ban for that store only.
Okay.
So if a store believes someone's buying for someone else, they'll locally ban them.
Right.
And so if they go to another store and they do it again, they'll get locally banned, and eventually they won't be able to buy liquor in the town at all.
Mm-hmm. The results from what's happened in the Northern Territory with the similar system, what have they shown? Have they been positive, overwhelmingly positive, or is it a slow burn?
So because their system's wrapped up with so many different initiatives,
mm-hmm.
Including police on the door of liquor stores, etc., it's really hard to dissect where all the different sort of advantages come. But what we did during COVID was we ran a sort of an analog version of the BDR in South Hedland with the help of the officer in charge, and I can't praise him highly enough.
Mm-hmm.
He is probably one of the most forethinking senior sergeants I've ever come across in my life.
Right.
So they were operating with a WhatsApp app. That's new kid technology, I don't know. So what would happen is they would, if somebody they thought was a problem in the store, they would put it on their WhatsApp to say this person's a problem.
Right.
And then they would get refused service around town. They'd also alert the police. So the police had another line of intelligence coming from the liquor stores,
mm-hmm.
which was really beneficial because that person might have also been involved in theft, or they might have been looking for another reason. So
mm-hmm.
it gave them probably seven more sets of eyes on the street that they didn't have. And the results from that, last time I checked on it, from COVID. Now, during COVID, domestic violence rates went up somewhere between 2 and 5%.
Mm-hmm.
But in Hedland, during COVID, domestic violence went down as much as 30%.
Wow, that's fantastic. Which I guess leads me to my next question, Pete. The community buy-in for something like this, a lot of people would, you know, there'd be a lot of libertarians sort of wringing their hands over this type of impediment of our civil liberties and things like that. But I guess the community up there in the Pilbara are all for this if they can try and drive down rates of, like you say, domestic violence and FASD.
So it ticks a number of boxes for them. First of all, if it drives down DV, it's good for everybody,
yeah.
Because that means you've got more functional families, you have less kids on the street because they don't want to go home,
mm-hmm.
all that type of stuff. Second of all, hopefully, when we start to cherry-pick the people that have the problem, and remembering, mm-hmm. when you get on the register,
mm-hmm.
you're offered clinical services to get off. So the thing is, if you want to get fixed,
mm-hmm.
the help will be there for you to get fixed.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good thing as well. But also, once we've done that, it means that hopefully we'll see the end of these blanket liquor restrictions where everybody gets restricted,
yeah.
Instead of the people that have got the problem. And blanket restrictions don't work. I mean, the blanket restriction where I am at the moment in Broome, just a couple of days ago, was one carton of mid-strength beer and a bottle of wine.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know you, but I couldn't put away one carton of mid-strength and a bottle of wine and still be sober.
No.
So, you know, those type of blanket restrictions don't stop the violence unless they take it down to like a six-pack, which will never happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
So this is a brand new tool in department's toolbox. All they've had up to now has been a blunt hammer.
Mm-hmm.
Now they've got something which is more like a surgical scalpel.
It's fantastic. Well, Peter Peck from the Liquor Stores Association of WA, good luck with the rollout today, and we really look forward to seeing some of the early results of the trial over the coming months. You take care.
You'll be the first person I ring, and it wasn't as scary as I thought it was going to be.
Thanks, Pete. You take care.
See ya.
The West Live. Making news.
My favourite Victorian. It's a great day.
It's a great
Matt
day.
Matt Timmy from Sunrise.
What a day. The adrenaline's still pumping, and I've just been on the WhatsApp streams,
the
text
WhatsApp
streams. December 8, we're open, guys.
Yeah. I was too. The minute it happened, I spoke to my sister-in-law's mum, lives in Melbourne. She's already booked flights.
Already booked?
Yeah, she's
coming
on
over.
It. She's on it.
So December 8, mm-hmm. New South Wales and Victoria, we are opening up to. There are conditions to this. There'll
yes.
be health screenings at the airport. You'll have to do a test if you're asked to do one, and you have to have a G2G pass, which is the most difficult G2G. Thing for me to ever say. G2G,
yes.
good
yes.
to go. Pass as well, filled out, which you can do online. So very exciting. Victoria reached 32 days today with no community cases.
Mm-hmm.
New South Wales is on track to reach the 28 days. So now I suppose it's the airlines and the staff at the airport and the government and the health department getting ready for a whole lot of West Aussies over East coming back. back home for Christmas. It's going to be like Love Actually, isn't it? It's going to be amazing.
I said, I cannot put myself forward to go and do the arrivals at the airport. I would be sobbing in the corner.
I felt like I was about to cry when that press conference was on. I thought, this is going to be awkward when we come back. I better clear this up.
Yeah, indeed.
It's been a long, long time. Eight odd months.
It has. Everyone's done a bloody good job. So hopefully Christmas is going to be very sweet for most West Australians.
Do you know what my parents have said, though? I said to them, this was, you know, about a week ago. I said, I reckon they're going to open up before Christmas. Oh. I reckon it's on.
Yeah.
They said, Matt, we don't think we're going to come over for Christmas.
Well, that's what, so Premier McGowan.
But do you know what? I was kind of, don't tell them this. I was kind of secretly like, this is going to be a low-key Christmas for us, and that's not a bad thing.
Yeah, just you, the kids, and some Aperol.
Next minute text, we're coming over. We've just booked flights.
Yeah. I think a lot of families will probably stay keep pretty safe.
And just wait out till next year.
Yeah. It was of aforementioned sister-in-law. Her mum has decided to stay. They won't stay with them. They're going to stay in a separate place at Airbnb just to make sure that, you know.
Very safe.
Yeah.
It's very considerate.
Very considerate.
Family. Hopefully people love us again, because there's been a bit of, you know, it's been a bit of East Coast hate, hasn't there?
Yeah, I haven't liked that.
Neither do I. I know.
No, it's gross. You know what else is gross is the fact that Crabfest in Mandurah is cancelled.
I love crabs too. And now it's cancelled for 2021. It was due to be held in March. Mm-hmm. And you're thinking, hang on a minute, it's only December. Why are they cancelling it already? Well, the council says that they've made the decision early because, you know, they don't want to put, you know, local businesses and partners and stakeholders putting their investment at risk.
Yeah,
so now before they go and spend all the money and go and catch all the crabs, they can find out it's not happening. 2 years in a row now.
No, but I guess it's
really crabby.
It's very... Well done. Sorry. Well done.
Bad joke.
We don't have any of the fancy buttons to push, though.
I'll bring in my own little drum set.
But I guess it is a smart move by the mayor down there to say, look, we have a very vulnerable population, being the majority of them being elderly, and it does cost a lot of money to put those events on.
And it's not like, say, for example, the Telethon Family Festival, where it's a ticketed event, it's enclosed. You can't do that at Crab Fest, which makes it really difficult to track and trace people, which reminds me, I should say to people, get on and download the Safe WA app, because the QR codes come in on December 5.
Indeed. And if you don't feel comfortable doing that, you can always, every venue should have an analogue system where you pick up a pen, I don't know if many are familiar, and you write your name.
Maybe you could just write your name and number on a piece of paper and then, just, you know, rip it off. You know how you see it at the supermarket sometimes? Yeah. Just do that.
Just place
Give
it,
that to
yeah,
them.
With some blue tack. Now, it's been so hot over East. This morning we woke up, I was shivering this morning, 7 degrees at 6 a.m.
It was so chilly. Yeah. I reached for the dressing gown. It was that cold.
Yes.
And now I'm sounding like a grandfather. So the good news is it's going to be heating up this week. But we did have the wettest November on record in Perth, 92 mils for the month, more than four times the average.
Yes.
The good news is for December, the average is only 10.6 mils.
Yes.
Now, it's only mostly sunny and 24 today, but it is getting up to the 30s within a couple of days. So, look, at least it's not those 40, 45 degree temperatures we're seeing over East.
And if anyone's experienced 45 degrees in Sydney, it is 67 degrees centigrade.
So humid,
It's revolting.
It was weird yesterday, though. People were decked out like they were going to the snow.
I had my puffer on.
Did you?
I'm a real Perthite now.
My neighbour said, I bumped into her on the way to the supermarket, and she said, I wanted to keep my UGG boots on, but I just thought, I can't stoop to that level.
No. No, not at all. Good, sir. Thank you so very much for joining me on The West Live. We'll see you on Sunrise tomorrow morning from 6.
Will do.
And then back in here after that.
Have a great day.
You too. Thanks so much.
Duffing Quarters.
Here, now it's only one half today. We didn't have time to fix the introduction. Glenn Quartermain, sports editor from the Sunday Times, award-winning journalist.
Thank you, Jenna.
So nice to see you again.
Yes, 2 weeks break, been painting my house.
And how'd the your little half marathon go on Sunday?
Yes, with Skeeter Reddings join me. So we just shuffled our way around like two old men at the back of the field.
Stop it.
But we actually ran fairly briskly and did a pretty good job,
surprisingly so.
And then the obligatory rehydration at the shoe bar.
I did hear.
Which went probably five times the length of the half marathon.
Yeah. But it's all for a very good cause, and I look forward to taking part in the official Men's Health run next year.
It will be, and it's looking like the Perth Running Festival in October, and there's some really exciting stuff going to happen around it, which I can't mention yet, but it's in the pipeline, and when I do, it'll be on your show.
Thanks so
much.
But
it will be a very big team we're putting together.
Good. Look forward to being a part of that for sure. really sad news overnight with Elijah Taylor and the sacking from the Swans.
Well, not surprising at all. Mm. He might have more greater concerns ahead of him because he's still got to face court.
Yeah,
but I think Elijah now, depending on what happens when he has his day in court, the best he can hope for, I don't think he'll be listed next year. Mm-hmm. There's a reduction in list sizes. There's this other stuff hanging over him. Mm-hmm. I think he needs 12 months of redemption. He needs to get back to whatever competition he can play in.
Mm-hmm.
And that's provided he's in the community and not incarcerated. Okay. And he needs to display some form of redemption, have his 12 months. He's only 19. He's a very talented footballer. So if he can prove that he's turned the corner, I think he deserves a second chance down the track. But let's see what weighs up in court first.
Yeah, for sure. Obviously, for people that aren't aware, the context is that he's facing domestic violence allegations by a former girlfriend. So I don't know when the court date is. But
no, he didn't have a great year, obviously, breaching the quarantine, et cetera, et cetera. The domestic violence at the head of it, obviously, very, very serious allegations. So he'll face that,
yes,
those charges, and then we'll see what happens. But down the track, there's a possibility, but it won't be happening next year, I wouldn't have thought.
Fingers crossed for the young gun. Hopefully he gets the help he requires. Trade. What the hell is going on with the AFL trade? I thought it was done.
Trade's done. We're talking about the lead up to the national draft now.
Oh.
Well, the trading period, the official trading period, you can still trade draft picks leading up to the actual...
This is more confusing than poker.
It is. It's very confusing to the average punter.
Yeah.
And I've long been an advocate for the AFL simplifying the whole thing.
Don't be silly.
Too complex. They love it.
Yeah.
But you need to be able to split the atom to work it out sometimes.
Yeah.
But basically, look, Frio's in pretty good nick. They got picks 10 and 28. Look, they're looking at a couple of kids to put in their next generation academy, Joel Weston and Brandon Walker, local boys.
Mm-hmm.
They'll be hoping no other club matches them or bids for them early. So they can get them later on.
Right.
I would say at the moment, North Melbourne has announced overnight that they're not now going to trade pick two in the draft.
Mm-hmm.
So I would suggest, if I'm Logan McDonald,
yes,
I'm thinking about learning that Kangaroos theme song. I think they would go with him. I think he's Riley Thilthorpe will go to Adelaide.
Okay.
Western Bulldogs would go with Jamara Ugle-Hagan, he'll be a next generation, but another club will surely bid for him early, so they'll have to take him very early.
He's
been likened to Buddy Franklin. Now, I would say it's pretty safe he won't be Buddy Franklin because Buddy Franklin is a 1 in 100 year player, but if he's anything like him, then strap yourself in. There are big raps for him.
Yeah.
A beautiful player, so look forward to seeing him, and I would expect he plays footy next year with the Western Bulldogs.
Yep.
Logan McDonald to North, Denver Granger Barassa, Swan District's kid, a defender, he'll go early.
Mm-hmm.
That's next Wednesday week is the national draft. So a bit of news there. Obviously, lists are coming down, 48 plus four rookies and then another two NGA players. So lists are being reduced, so there's less opportunity for players this year.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll obviously re-look at that next year, whether lists go up again.
Yeah.
So a lot happening in the AFL, even though it is a quiet period. So your confusion is warranted. There is still draft pick trading, but the player trading is done.
Okay, got it. I did see the news overnight that, forgive me, I only read the headline, so I'm one of those Karens on Facebook. Mm. So the AFL have made a profit this year?
Yes, they have made a profit. This is a marginal profit. Clubs have done pretty well, actually. I think they were looking at a big black hole.
Mm-hmm.
I think they got into action pretty quickly. Unfortunately, the byproduct was a lot of great football people are lost to the system.
Mm-hmm.
Massive
behind the scenes people, right?
Yeah. Assistant coaches, people, hardworking people who've been involved with the footy club for decades.
Yep.
Gone from the system. It's the very sad byproduct of it, but it had to happen in order for the clubs to. This is about the clubs surviving this year. The AFL's done a magnificent job in getting the season underway, getting the fixtures at least, happening was just an amazing job, really. So I think we should all sort of stand up and applaud what's happened this year.
Mm.
There was an expectation that not every club would survive.
Yeah.
Every club looks like it's going to survive.
Yeah.
So it's great news for all AFL fans, and, they can limit. I think there's going to be – I don't think we'll see – I think the effects of COVID will still be felt 4 or 5 years from now on the balance sheet.
Mm.
But I think they've weathered the greatest part of the storm.
Yeah. I don't know, one of my favourite AFL or sporting reporters over East is Conrad Marshall from The Age. I hope that he writes a piece about just how that this insular, what happened during this year, how the AFL sort of cobbled it. I think it'd be a fascinating read. One that businesses and sporting lovers would love.
Well, I'm waiting for the book 10 yeah. years down the track on what actually happened inside the hub.
Oh, because my God, I can tell imagine.
You don't want to scratch that surface, I can tell you.
Not right now. Yeah. It's too soon.
I reckon they are the Titanic iceberg. this one's a lot bigger beneath the surface. So.
Oh, dear. Mm. Oh, dear. Well, so from AFL to, I guess, an NBA star, Andrew Bogut, who came home. He was an outspoken, you know, social commentator and also great on the court.
Still is.
Yeah, absolutely.
Number one draft NBA draft pick.
Yeah.
A championship player with Golden State Warriors in their golden years. Was hoping to play in a fourth Olympics. That would have happened this year. Yeah. And then the plan was play in his fourth Olympics, retire. It didn't happen. He was hoping to stretch it, but the body hasn't stood up. So he's had to make the call. Made it overnight.
Yeah.
Has retired. Great servant to Australian sport. Not lost to the game. Mm-hmm. I'm sure he'll be involved, whether it's in a coaching role or in a commentary role. I think it probably leans more towards commentary at this point.
Yep.
But well done, Andrew Bogut, and thanks for all the memories.
How old is he?
He'd be, I'm guessing, but he's 30 plus, so 32, 33, I reckon.
Oh, what a career. I look forward to the Netflix series about that.
It probably will be.
Years to come. Now, before we let you go, the test that kicks off in Canberra.
Well, the ODI tomorrow, so it's the third and last of the ODI. So Dave Warner out. He won't play any more white ball cricket. It's a torn groin. It's not requiring surgery, but if you look at the footy equivalent, probably 4 to 6 weeks injury. So he doesn't play any more white ball cricket. I reckon he's going to be touch and go. I would say he won't play in the first test on December 17 in Adelaide.
Okay.
Then he will return for the second and third test. I'd say that's the more likely scenario, which opens the door for Will Pekoski to make his debut. Interesting tomorrow, who opens with Aaron Finch? Will they go with Labuschagne being promoted up the order, which might make Sean Abbott perhaps can slot into him, or will they go with Matthew Wade, who can probably carry that role? It's a dead rubber in many ways.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see there. The other news is Pat Cummins has also been withdrawn just to be rested to get him cherry ripe for the four tests.
Mm-hmm.
Very good management by Australia. But that means that our great friend AJ Tye, who hasn't played international cricket for a couple of years and has had that shoulder surgery this year, is now flying. And let's keep our fingers crossed that he gets a Guernsey tomorrow in the ODI.
Fingers crossed. Mm. We love him in here.
We do.
We're not biased at all.
Yes, we love our AJ. Great fella, great player.
Indeed. Now, our good mate Duff is on well-earned break, so we will see him hopefully next week.
He'll be back next week, somewhere on his way down south to have some well-earned R&R.
Indeed.
Probably be having a swan draft or two in my honour, I'd suggest.
Good.
Good for him.
Glenn Corder, mate, we'll see you in the Sunday Times and then join us on the West Live next week. Thanks for joining us.
Pleasure.
Now, Neds have been a proud sponsor of the West Live throughout the spring racing carnival, and we've chatted a lot about how easy it is finding a winner with filter form. But now that Melbourne Cup is well and truly in the rearview mirror, we're heading deep into the 2020 Ascot Racing Carnival. So I thought it would be a good time to bring up the Neds Punters Toolbox. The Punters Toolbox is exclusive to the Neds app, and it's a one-stop shop for everything you need to help get you more value on the horses, the doggies, and harness racing. Unleash your Punters Toolbox today. It's where punting is made easy and where you can take it to the Neds level. T's and C's apply. See the Neds website for details, but please remember to gamble responsibly. If you need any help, call 1800 858 858.
The Wild West.
As day follows night. Have I got that right?
Yeah.
Day follows night. Whatever. It's a Geraldton. There's a Geraldton story with Ben O'Shea in the Wild West. How are you this morning, my friend?
I'm doing very well. if I get any time off over Christmas, I'll go up to Gero. I'll spend some time up there.
I think I would love to see that as either an Instagram video or a series in the paper.
Yeah, I reach out to the local tourism association. See the sites. you know, the first place I ever went to, because I'm not from Western Australia originally. I'm from Queensland.
Yes.
And the first time I ever came to WA was a hockey tournament, like a nationals, like under 13s.
Okay.
And it was in Geraldton.
Brilliant.
So I do have fond memories of Gero. in my formative years. Luckily, I never bumped into anyone like this when I was there. So this Geraldton Muso, 56-year-old Muso, has got into a bit of an argument with his 79-year-old father-in-law. One can only presume
alarm bells are already ringing.
One can only presume it was about, you know, what's your favourite Bruce Springsteen song or something like that.
That's true.
And so they were next door neighbours as well. And I should point out at this point, the 79-year-old father-in-law is a cancer patient in palliative care. So you treat him very gently.
You just let him have whatever secret Santa pick he wants, okay, buddy?
Exactly.
Leave him alone.
Exactly. And so they've gotten into an argument. There might have been some alcohol involved, and the alleged accused has grabbed the victim by his shirt, given him a bit of a shake, and then thrown him to the ground. And the police have turned up where this Muso was arrested, and he told the cops, "Oh, no, my father-in-law just falls over all the time. Didn't do it."
No, that's not okay.
No, it's not okay. So he has now been charged, and he will go to trial next year. So we'll see how he goes with that. Certainly it'll be some awkward times at Christmas this year.
Oh, yeah. That is awkward. And I've already used my Secret Santa joke, so I'm not going to go back over that. That is going to be very awkward.
It's going to be very awkward carving the turkey.
You wouldn't want any sharp objects around.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, dear.
So, yeah. So show a bit of kindness at Christmas, people.
Indeed. Indeed. Now, I remember those horrific bushfires down south. I cannot believe it was, 5 years ago?
Yeah, 5 years ago. It was. Like, I think everybody in WA was just so sad to see Yarloop wiped off the map, really. Like, it was 70,000 hectares of land was gone in the space of a few minutes as that bushfire just ripped through so fast. And I think a lot of people thought that Yarloop would never recover. It was kind of, you know, it was a very small town, off the beaten track a little bit on the way down to...
Old Milltown.
Down to Bunbury. Mm. And so I think if you had to bet, you wouldn't have bet on it rebuilding at all. You would have thought people just would have moved to Bunners or wherever. Mm-hmm. But that hasn't been the case. The locals refused to let the town die. And now, half a decade on, it'll be half a decade next week, they're sort of taking stock of what they've been able to achieve. And even though the fire destroyed more than 160 houses, claimed the lives of two people, and there was nothing left. Like, there was really nothing
flattened,
left.
Wasn't it?
It was just a pile of ash. But now they're talking about it's back bigger and better than ever. Like, actually, they're expecting the next time they do the census, it will actually have a bigger population.
So good.
70 new houses have gone up in the area. There's a cafe. All sorts of stuff are going there. And there's been a lot of migrants moving down to Yarloop, people from interstate coming in as well. Mm-hmm. So it's really changed, I guess, the demographics of the town. Mm. That promises like a pretty bright future, I think. The fact that there are all these new people coming to town, because like, it's like a lot of country towns, they're kind of, you know, aging population, the young kids move to the city, all that kind of stuff. So now it's been this kind of like refresh, renewal, and now they're really positive about the future. So I think that's such a cool story.
It is.
And it's, you know, like you sort of drive past the turn off to Yarloop on the way down to the southwest.
Yeah.
And I've never taken that turn off, but I reckon after reading this story, I'll turn down there, go and have a look, spend a bit of money at the local cafe, and just like really, really soak in this amazing WA success story.
The most beautiful wildflowers down there as well.
Yeah.
Stunning.
Oh, absolutely.
If you do have the time, anyone, and I implore anyone that has the time to take your trip down south a little bit slower than usual, take the Southwest Highway where you pass through all those beautiful places like Yarloop, all the way on the back way to Collie. It's just beautiful this time of year.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it's awesome. It's a great testament to the resilience of WA, which we've seen this year with COVID. Like, even though we were spared the worst of it, I think, you know, like, WA did the right thing. We all stuck together. And, you know, like, Yarloop is a great success story to celebrate this Christmas.
Indeed. Ben O'Shea, hear, hear. Thank you so very much for joining us in the Wild West. We'll see you tomorrow on the West Live.
You sure will.
That's it from me. If you missed any of the show, you can catch up with the podcast, including bite-sized interviews and segments, wherever you get a chance. We'll be back tomorrow from 8:45 live on thewest.com.au. We'll see you then.
You've been listening to The West Live with Jenna Clark. Brought to you by Neds. Take it to the Neds level. Gamble responsibly. 1-800-858-858. If the story behind the story matters to you, then you can count on thewest.com.au to deliver.